All right, it's at 5. Yeah, I can begin. Today is Monday, the 26th of January in 2015. And Baruch Hashem, we're all sitting in Israel, not in New York. And we're very happy because our Rachmanis on those in New York. I just heard WINS, and it's real. They expect a tremendous storm there. Here we still have beautiful weather, although by the end of the week they say there may be some rain. Now, I it's not my nature to respond, but I just want to clarify one thing. I want to thank Rabbi Hertz, who visited Israel, left last night, and at Shir yesterday gave me a beautiful picture of myself appears in Ami magazine. I don't know where they got this picture. That's exactly me teaching in the middle of stating something. And of course, it's a critique of Rakefet. In a publicly broadcast shiur at the end of December 2014, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf, Rashi Presley, Rabbinical Yeshiva, blah, 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 rejected my editorial out of hand, Kedako Bakodesh. He was being flippant without attempting to present any justification for his dismissiveness. It deals with the Das Torah, I defended Rabbi Prusansky. So I just want to tell Rabbi Yitzchak Frankfurter, you can criticize me for many reasons, but you cannot criticize me for being flippant. On any topic I've ever spoken about, I have, on a graduate school level, bored the audiences without end, just to be thorough and teach myself. You know, right now I'm in the second year on why Jews kill each other over an Erev and Flatbush. Show me so much, any other Rosh Hashiva that spends two full years on a Erev. Whatever topic I've touched since 78, I've spent endless years. Das Torah, I spent over 6 months in the Monday class a number of years ago. They're probably the best lectures I ever gave. And all you have to do is go back and assess them. But the reason I'm very quick is if I'm going to get involved commenting on what you're commenting on my Talmud, Rabbi Prusansky, and start going through my Das Torah lectures, I won't be teaching. And this is why I'm very makpid. I say, I spoke about this 2 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago. It's on YUTorah.org. You access it. Let me go further. So I want to just feel that your comment that I'm flippant, you can disagree with me from today to tomorrow, but your comment that I'm flippant, in my humble opinion, is not in place. Also, I want to mention broadcast. We give shurim in the colon on why you today, the nohag is, how do you say nohag in English? The custom, the general practice, all the shiurim go up in the colon. So it's not that I'm broadcasting, I'm just giving a shiur, and it happens to go up on the website. As far as my picture, I wondered why my picture is there. It would seem to me you should have Gil Student, or you should have Rabbi Slifkin's picture. But then I realized you probably want the world to see that this is Rakefet, wears a kippah shrugah, doesn't have a beard, doesn't have payas. I'm looking at the picture. But I just want to remind you that the Baal Mesilat Yesharim did not have a beard either. So if I'm in the company of the Ramchal, I'm in good company, but you can feel confident because my sons-in-law have beards, my grandsons have beards, many of my Talmidim have beards, so I'm still from the old generation, we'll put it that way. Anyway, outside of that, no further comments are necessary, and we can disagree, and disagree b'kavod, with honoring each other. And that's exactly what I'm leading into today. The biggest disagreement ever in modern Torah history is, of course, the disagreement between the Litvakin and the Hasidim. And we finished out, do me a favor, just close the door. We finished out, Ellie, we finished out YU, bringing YU up to the 1970s. I can't go further in the course of the history of Torah in the United States. I have a world of material yet to do. But you'll notice in general, I will always cut off in the 60s, not beyond 1970, for the simple reason that from that point on, I lived it, I was part of it, I have a prejudice, I'm no longer objective. When you teach Torah history, I'm trying to be as objective as a human being can possibly be. And we brought YU and the whole Litvish world, Reb Shmuel Belkin, a fascinating individual, a man who lived in two worlds and could... He was different than the Rav. The Rav certainly lived in two worlds, but he bridged the two worlds very nicely, and you didn't feel any a chasm between the Rav as brisk in Boston and yet brisk in the Western world, brisk in New York, brisk in the Western world. Well, Shmuel Belkin, the yeshiva boy aspect never left him, but yet he could sit down with Einstein and with Cardinal Spellman, and he built what is today Yeshiva University. What he did with the Litvakim, what we spoke about last time, which, you know, you can say which achievement means the most to you, certainly to me, the fact that he brought in the Reb David Lifshitz, Reb Noach Bornstein, Reb Yeruchim Gurelik, afterwards Reb Chenich Fishman, Reb Gershon Yankelevich, attempted to get Reb Schacht into the yeshiva, attempted to get Reb Moshe Feinstein into the yeshiva. The man had a tremendous appetite to bring in Gedolim and Gedolim to teach and influence the students. Of course, to me, the greatest achievement was he brought Slabodka into the yeshiva of Yaakov Moshe Kohen Lesson. And we spoke about him in length, and I just want to show you what Talmud was kind enough to send me a picture. What comes up on the internet is beyond words, but this is Rav Avigdor Miller. This is the greater Miller family in 1925. And in the corner is Rav Avigdor Miller. You can see a young man, clean-shaven, a young man, and these are the grandparents, of course, and it would be fascinating to trace everyone in this picture and see what happened to them on the American scene. It's practically, it's 90 years ago, which is in modern Hebrew, Chatichat Zman. But that was the literature world. Tremendous machloket with the Hasidic world, by Spezier's heard endless criticism, endless jokes, endless critique, endless sharp comments about that Hasidic world. Wherever I turned, I had Rebbeim from YU to Lakewood. The Rav was very different, of course, and it could very well be that what I'm about to begin, I can only begin and only do in Be'ezrat Hashem, a world of material. I can only do it because I see Rebbe's image in front of me and I'm a Talmud of the Rav. A great miracle happened in America, and that, of course, is the rebirth of Hasidus. Not just the rebirth of Hasidus, but American Hasidus. The latest issue of Jewish Action shocked many people. It created much discussion. Wherever I went, people asked me about the article. I don't have to tell you, this was the cover of the magazine, The Rise of Neo-Hasidus in the Western Hemisphere in the United States. Here's a picture that, of all the pictures Jewish Action could choose, it's a picture that was taken right in this building. You see dancing here with the Mashpia, my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger. Here's Reb David Miller. Here you see Jonathan, here you see Josh, our Talmidim who work in the Abraham program, and believe me, they look like very dedicated Hasidim. I noticed the Mashpia's eyes are closed, Reb David Miller's eyes are closed. The two younger Rabbanim look like they're very excited. So Baruch Hashem, a miracle has taken place. Now, let me try to understand Hasidus, and let me try to understand what makes it so attractive. And here you've heard me say time and again, and I've illustrated it, and I don't want to be flippant, but nevertheless, I don't want to repeat myself. That some of you know I spent practically, it could be a whole year on the Musa movement. See, the literature world is a world in which learning conquers all. But then occasionally you saw that someone could learn in Volozhin, and we can give many examples. Volozhin, Slabodka, tells Bachurei Yeshiva, and then when they went into the big world, they left the path. Some left more, some left less. So that's the Musa movement came on the scene. And the Muslim movement attempted to turn you into a human being putting on tefillin, not a monkey putting on tefillin. The Muslim movement fought their greatest enemy, mitzvot anashim melumada, to do mitzvot out of rote, out of habit. And we all have seen this more than once. People do mitzvot out of rote, out of habit. I can give you a very simple example. So many people light Hanukkah candles. Now you just think for a minute what Hanukkah candles mean. How can people, let's take the land of Israel, I would say 99% of the Jewish population lights Hanukkah candles. Meretz lights Hanukkah candles. Lapid lights Hanukkah candles. Peres lights Hanukkah candles. If they were around at the time of the Hellenists, would they be with the Maccabim or with the Hellenists, with the Mitzvotim? You just think about that question. That's a very powerful question. Where would they be? What are you talking about? You're lighting Hanukkah candles. What's the message of Hanukkah? And where do you live? How do you live? What is your lifestyle? But we do it out of rote, out of habits. Thank God, I'm not complaining. It's much better to light Hanukkah candles out of rote and habit than not to do it at all. But to be a Muslim, it meant to really understand what you're doing, to have commitment, to have depth, that you are part of the Torah people. This is a halakhic system. This is the way a Jew lives. This is not seven nishma. What we some concepts we have choice, some we don't. There's an entire configuration. All right, the Musa system, maybe since its founding in approximately 1840, when Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Rabbi Yisrael Lipkin went public, maybe it affected a few thousand people. Among the people it affected are two people sitting in this room. I shouldn't include myself, who could be that boisterous to say I'm a Muslimic, but I grew up in the Muslim world. I can say Rabbi Rubin. If you know Rabbi Rubin personally, he is a person who lives with adinut and sincerity and cares about the other human being. And that's Musa. We sat together before the Mashgiach many years. The masses can't follow. Life has taught me the masses are not on a level. They just are not on a level. This is the reality of life. People are concerned not with spirituality and not with eternity. And that they hear a dummy like Rakefet come to Florida and speak about the romance of being a Jew. So many eyes opened. I was mobbed, I was hugged, I was kissed. The Roman, but I don't fool myself. I got on the plane and I came back home. 99% of the people who heard me speak forgot about it. My wife asked me, what did you accomplish? I spoke to a high school group. I'll give you just the background in a minute, in a second, in a concise. But all of Chinuch today in America is in the hands of what you call the black hats. That's what they call them in America. Here we call it Charedim. Which is true, the graduates of Lakewood, the graduates of Torah Vadas, the graduates of Beis Yaakov, the modern Orthodox world, very few go into chinuch, majority go into medicine, law, banking, you know, they're conquering the world. So you have a real problem. You have people in our world who want to give their kids a good education, they don't want a co-ed day school, And they send the kids to schools where there's no Yom HaTzmut, there's no Israel, all they hear is criticism and criticism and criticism. And these people are very upset. And they don't want to send them to a day school with boys and girls mixed classes. So it's a big problem all over the United States. Thank God in Israel we do not have this problem. It's been ameliorated over the decades. It's a different world today in Israel. We have much more choice. So in North Miami Beach, they organized a girls' high school that they call Beis Yaakov Light. It's tries to be from like Beis Yaakov, but they observe Yom HaTzmud. And my student, married to a student, helped organize the school. And they pleaded with me to speak there. All right, I had no choice. I owe these students. I can't. I don't like to speak to high school kids. How can they understand me, etc.? It's not the 1960s today. You understand, I would like to throw around Shas Poiskim, Machabat. All right, high school kids. So I spoke to the 11th and 12th grades. I hope the talk will go on the YU website. If it's not there yet, I spoke with Florida, because that talk was recorded. And I spoke to about 80 girls, and you'll hear the talk on the website. And I came home and I told Malka, I said, I'm really inspired. I really did something good today. And Malka said, what will the results be? I said, in 50 years from now, out of those 80 girls I spoke to, there are going to be hundreds of more souls living on Admat HaKodesh. And that the word, the key word was romance. And their eyes lit up, and they were, and I could see the Nachel, who is a Bnei Kivinik, Shehitchared, or they use the modern Hebrew, Hitchazek, I could see he was sitting there suffering, you know, thinking maybe I made some bad mistakes in my life. No, I mean it sincerely, suffering. I saw the response. So you see, the average person, they're all right. These children, these young ladies, 11th and 12th grade, they're young enough yet to be impressed, young enough to seek truth. But the Musa movement fell flat in its face. It achieved, but 1 out of 100, 2 out of 1,000. I have to be honest, I'm not here to wave the flag. I'm a Litvak, I'm a Musanik, we conquered the world. We didn't conquer the world. We conquered Rakefid and Reuben, we conquered, Baruch Hashem. Chassidus, what is Chassidus? And I want to say a few words about Chassidus and why it had the power and why it has such an attraction in the year 2016. It is so attractive. Why? Okay. Number one. The Rebbe, the Admor, call him what you wish, does not necessarily have to be the greatest Gaon alive. In the literature world, you're not going to get off the floor unless you're a Talmid Chacham. All right? Don't have to illustrate, we all understand it. Gruss faculty, you have Rabbi Bednesh, terrific Ilui, Rabbi Miller, Talmid Chacham Muflag, Rabbi Danny Mann. Don't have to tell you, my Talmid, married to a Talmid, he said, you read his psakim every week in Torah Tidbits. That's for many years, they didn't reveal he was called, what was he called, the Weber Rebbe or something. But now he reveals himself, he's published Sfarim. This is the literature world. A Chassidic Rebbe, what's much more important is he can do what no other human being can do. Now, what do I mean by that? We all have to work for a living. No matter what we do, we're on the run, we're on the go, I daven at a minyan, where everyone thinks I'm a tzaddik. I haven't said kedusha with my minyan in the morning for the last 45 years, okay? I don't have to elaborate. Everyone's rushing. A Rebbe, his whole life is kedusha b'tara. He sits, doesn't have financial problems. He doesn't have to meet a budget. He doesn't have to cover his visa. Chassidim are more than happy to support the Rebbe and the Rebbe's court. But the Rebbe becomes an image, if he's a proper Rebbe, obviously. And I don't believe you can be a Rebbe with tens of thousands of Chassidim without being a proper Rebbe. Chassidim have choice. No one forces you to go to this Rebbe. Plenty of Satmar became Lubavitchers. I don't believe there are many Lubavitchers that became Satmar. Just a few weeks ago, there was a terrible incident in Williamsburg when Rabbi Yoel Cohen came to Williamsburg to address Satmar who are seeking a broader experience and wanted a little of Lubavitch, so he was beaten up by the Satmar who I don't have to defend. You all know what Satmar is capable of doing when they get angry. There's a picture circulating on the websites today where they hang the image of the Lubavitcher Rebbe on Purim off a lamppost in Williamsburg in the mid-50s. And that picture is circulating on the websites. Someone sent it to me, but I just couldn't look at it. It hurt so much. But a Rebbe, his life is Kedusha V'tara. That you seek, and this was, you take the Rujim Rebbe, Rabbi Israel Friedman, the founder of a tremendous dynasty that has many branches, and they don't fight. They live with each other, b'shalom, b'shalvo, and Ruzhinah, Einiklach, come together. They alle sitzen ebenon. They all sit together in front. There's no machleket. You take what goes on in other chassidiyot. It's beyond words. Who gets sits up front? Who's near the Rebbe? A cousin there to use the same the bells as bells. The Rebbe. What going on? We punish them. And you take the Rushina, Rabbi Israel Friedman. The tzitkut kulo kedusha v'tara. His tefillah. His they tell the story. That a delusion is told about many rebbeim. You know, again, it's one of these anecdotes, but the point is well driven home that a big Litvish Talmud Chacham came to see him. They met each other, and the Litvish says, "I don't understand. I'm in Litva, big. We know Shas, we know Poskim. But what do you know?" And the Litvish says to the Rebbe, the Rebbe says to the Litvish, "I can read your mind." So the Rosh Yeshiva gets, he's now up in arms. "You can read my mind? Read my mind." And the Rebbe says to him, "You are thinking right now, Malach HaLaretz Kavodo." "Absolutely not. I'm not thinking it. I'm not thinking Malach HaLaretz Kavodo." And the Rebbe says, "That's exactly why I'm a Rebbe, because that's what I'm thinking all the time, even though you're not." And that story captures the Litvak and the Chassid, and there are many versions. One version to the story is that the Rosh Yeshiva says to the Chassidic Rebbe, "Why do you have so many followers? People travel from all over, and no one comes to see me." And then the Rebbe pulls the same shtick on him. "Well, I'll tell you, I can read the minds of, I can read your mind too." And he says, "No, I'm not thinking like that. That's why people don't stand online to see you, you understand?" And there's so much truth here, because the average Jew, with all due respects, and I've been smacked in my face many times, I try to give a shiur on a level to a popular audience. You can't do it. They don't understand what you're talking about. I can tell you in Boca what happened to me after this shiur. It's not for now. I may get involved with it if the Beis Din, what I said yesterday, if the Beis Din for the Sikui Haged issues a written statement, then I'll deal with it in class. But I spoke about something in Sikui Get, and I went into an offshoot, and I tried to develop an idea, and people spoke with me afterwards. People who learned by the Rav sat in my class. All right, then they became conservative rabbis. In their old age, they became Torahic again. And I had a student who's furious. Any conservative rabbi, he's my chauffeur, the student, David. And he wants to eat them alive. And I said to him, "Just tell me, are the kids from?" "Yeah, his kids are from." I said, "Okay, don't eat him alive. Only eat half of him alive. The kids are from." But I'm ratzed. But Kedusha, Tara, that a chassid can appreciate. So that's one point why chassidim need a rebbe, and they feel they're getting their money's worth for whatever support they bring to the court. They see the way the Rebbe lives. Okay. Then there's a second point, and this is a very powerful point. You see, what characterized Rebbeim, when a chassid came to the Rebbe, he felt he had a shoulder to cry on. He could share his joy, he could share his sorrow. Now, this is a very important concept. We are human beings. We're human beings. There's a lot of joy in life. There's a lot of sorrow in life. I need not tell you what sorrow's about. Unfortunately, I don't have parents. Many of you here don't have parents anymore. No, it's a shiva for a parent. It hurts. It breaks you. Your mother, your father. You go to a Rebbe and you unburden yourself. And the Rebbe really cares. And this is what Chazal say. Again, I can't go, I've spoken about this many times with the sources and what the real source is, but in popular language, Tzarat HaRabim, nu, help me out, Chatzi Nechama. It's that, by the way, that is not in the Medrash. The Medrash says, Kol Sarah, Shehit Sarah, Parabim, Einat Sarah. That, and for Kol Sarah, Shehilot Sarah, Parabim, that's a Sarah. But we say, who wants to quote the three lines? So we say, Sarah, Parabim, Chatzin, Chama. You see, this is what Nicham Avel is about. What is Nicham Avel all about? When so many people share in the sorrow, it takes away part of your sorrow. It's like the Gemara says, "Bikuchoyim," you take away a 60th of the illness. The human being feels, look, I'm not alone. My sorrow is a general sorrow. My sorrow is a general sorrow. I'm part of the human race. I'm part of Am Yisrael. I'm not alone. This is Simchat Chatan V'Kala. Why is that so important? There's a big difference if a Chatan V'Kala get married at the rabbinate with 10 people present, or you get married opposite the Kotel HaMaravi with hundreds of people present. Am I right or wrong? What do you say, Rafi? There's a big difference. And now, Rabbeim were famous, and this I know from people, the Gera Rebbe, who really built Ger, or Gur in modern Hebrew, Alat Mat HaKodesh, was Rabbi Yisrael Alta. And they say about Rabbi Yisrael Alta, you know, you were a tourist, how often did you get to Israel in those days? Someone came to see him in 1950. That same person came to see him again in 1980. He not only remembered the person, he could tell you your wife's name, your children's name, what your problems were. And the chassid walked out. The Rebbe really cares about me. And I can tell you, I heard the Rav. Jason, you're with me? I heard the Rav in a tape, not a clear tape, it was recorded evidently clandestinely. If I'm not mistaken, it was from 1969, and Rebbe was talking at Yad Kislev, in Boston. He was one of the guests, and they invited him, and he spoke, the Rav came, his roots, the Chabad, Haslavich, etc. And the Rav, you know, this is a very difficult period in his life. In 67, he lost his mother, his brother, and then his wife. Wife is Churban Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Bet. Not simple. You know, you lose any other relative, you go home to your family. You lose your spouse, your whole home is shattered. The whole Beit Hamikdash that you built together with your spouse. And the Rav, I need not tell you, all of you have seen the documentary movie on The Lonely Man of Faith. Everyone agrees. There's no argument about among the Rav students. There's plenty of argument who the Rav was, what the Rav thought. Everyone pulls the Rav right, left, etc. But when it comes to the change in his personality, he was a broken person. I always say, I'm much happier that I had the Rav when he was a tyrant, when he yelled at us and shot missiles at us, than my own students who had the Rav in the 70s, he was a teddy bear. What a difference between the 50s to the 70s. But I heard the Rav cry at this Yutet Kislev when he spoke. He said, I wish I had a Rebbe. He said, I envy a chassid who can go to the Rebbe and unburden himself. And then when he walks out, the chassid feels, the Rebbe is with me, the tzaddik is with me, the person who lives b'kedusha v'tahara is with me. It's a beautiful thought, a beautiful thought. And that's why I say, if I wanted to be a Hasidic Rebbe, I could have been a Rebbe. I understand the title is a fabulous title, Maplewood of Rebbes. It clings. It's a klingsich. It's good. All right, you got to grow a beard. They're not going to put your picture in on me because they don't want to show that this man who has influence on even Haredim Look at him. Look what he looks like. That's why I think my picture. Otherwise, I can't understand why they chose my picture. Where's my picture? I'm only one of the ones in the article. And the and no one knows me. Who knows me? Rabbi Slifkin, they know. Rabbi Krasinski, they know. Gil Student, they know. But how do they know me? I mean, only you, I would imagine only within the Grist they know me. But okay, be it as it may, but occasionally I get letters about family, about smuchat, and I feel when I respond that I give nichum, give bracha, it lessens the burden. I understand that we're all human beings. It lessens the burden. The Rebbe is with you. The Tzaddik is with you. The Admor is with you. It's a beautiful thought. And the Rav was jealous. Broke down and cried. So, you know, simpletons always ask me, so why doesn't he go to a Rebbe? You don't understand. He was raised in Brisk. It's a different gestalt. It's very hard for a Litvak to go. You know, we'll go to the Rebbe right away. Who can learn better? Me or the Rebbe? You understand? It's a different gestalt. But the Rav had appreciation. This he taught me. No one can deny that the Rav had appreciation. Rabbi Ruchin Gerelich, I doubt if he had appreciation. Rav Noach Bornstein, I doubt very much if he had appreciation. The Rav had appreciation. Et verstanden, was das meint zu sein, chassid, and what the Rebbe does for him. Okay, this is the second point, and I hold that to be one of the most important points. Then I want to say something else. In life, we have to make decisions. And sometimes these decisions are very important. I mean, the biggest decision you make in life, first of all, is what school to send your children to. A much more basic decision, which I don't know, I find it hard on this even to comprehend how people seek guidance, because I'm a romanticist, but the person you marry, big decision. The Medrash says, Hakol acharei ha'isha. Am I right, Avram? Lead me into the Medrash. Everything. The Medrash says, I quoted this when I spoke about building a happy house, that a Rasha married a tzaddik, he becomes a tzaddik. A tzaddik marries a Rasha, he becomes a Rasha. We the women ran our homes, plain and simple. I don't know where you come from, but since time immemorial, you never speak, I'm going to my grandfather's house. It always was, I'm going to Bubby's house. I understand that. There's no question about it. My grandchildren don't say they're going to Sabu's home. They're going to Gran's house. The women ran the homes. No, these are big decisions. The schools send your children. People consulted me in Miami Beach. I told them, come in Aliyah. In Florida, in Hollywood, I should say. Come in Aliyah. No, they can't. They're in the middle of life. I'm a shop guy. I don't play games with my students. I said to a dear student there, I said, your wife doesn't want to come. Don't double talk me. All right. True. No two ways. I know many people who came and the arm is made or broken by the woman's attitude. Because basically, I came in Aliyah. I did what I did in America. I learned Torah day and night. I taught Torah as much as I could. What did I do in America? But for the missus, for the wife, for the Akeret Habayit, at least back in 69, tremendous adjustments. There was no frozen food here, to use one example. I always give the story with Super Soul on Agron that there was a wonderful family, the Gross family, they're no longer alive. And the lady went in, they're suddenly selling barbecue chickens. So she goes on Thursday, and she wants to buy 4 barbecue chickens. No, but this is Israel. This is Yerushalayim. And the Sephardic gentleman selling the chickens asks her, Makasim kokacha be'ofad. So she says, 2 for Shabbat and 2 I'm going to put into the freezer for next week. Ma lahakpiyotam ein lechem tam.
זאת בושה לתרגולת של ירושלים. לא, אני לא מוכר לך. I will not. And he wouldn't sell her four chickens. Only two? You come back next Thursday. You cannot freeze them. And she had to abide. There was no choice. Then that was the basically the only big food store in Jerusalem. Oh, Ribbono Shel Olam. Today, Baruch Hashem, a lot has changed. But you got to make big decisions in life. Right now, you got to make a big decision. Who you're going to vote for? All right. Imagine people. When you have a Rebbe, you have guidance. You don't have to worry. He makes the decisions for you. And that's fabulous. You have faith in the Rebbe. He makes the decisions. He takes the burden off of my shoulders. And for me as a Litvak, this is such a hard concept to understand. I can tell you, maybe the early 70s, Tisha B'Av, on a bus going back from the Kotel. And I struck up a conversation with a Gera Chassid. And we're having a wonderful conversation. And there were elections. You can check it out. We can even figure out what Tisha B'Av it was. There were elections right afterwards. And so I say to him, I told him, I'm going to vote for Mizrahi. Who will you vote for? And this man, so intelligent, running a big business, big store, well-to-do. Masha HaRebbe Yagid Li, Ani Atzpia. And I'm shaking. What kind of answer is that? But it's a fabulous answer. When you're a chassid, how many people ask the Lubavitcher Rebbe, should I marry this girl? I don't know. You're going to ask a rabbi, should you marry? Either you're in love or you're not in love. Either the pull is there or the pull is not there. Allow yourself. Fall in love. Dance on top of the narrow bed, the narrow sword, paraphrasing the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Could ask the rabbi. But you see, what should I study in college? What should I do with my business? And even though the Alter Rebbe, the Baal Tanya, if you've studied Tanya, you know what I'm saying? The Baal Tanya yelled and shouted. I spoke about it years ago when I gave the history of Hasidut, that Hasidim bothered me with foolish questions. Make your own decisions. And yes, I've heard people ask the Rebbe what color car to buy. Could you imagine you have a choice of colors when you buy a car? But he's the happiest guy alive. The Rebbe is giving him an answer. It takes a lot of pressure off your back. And this works both ways. Because the fact that a chassid will accept the Rebbe, and to use a modern word, I claim that Das Torah, a great deal of it evolved from the relationship between a chassid and a rebbe. And I stand on that. People have criticized me. People argued with me. No, I claim that Das Torah, they saw the way the Hasidic world works and how powerful and how Hasidim remain loyal. And you'll see why in a minute why Hasidim remain loyal in much higher percentages than the non-Hasidim. Das Torah, the rebbe said, you're the happiest guy alive. Now this gives the rebbe tremendous power. For instance, I don't have to go any further than New York City. In New York City, religious Jews are slaughtering little Jewish infants. And no one can do anything to stop them because the Satmar Rov controls 50,000 votes. You know what that means in a democracy? In a democracy, take Israel, take the kippot wearers. You see kippot. Buy a GED. Yishai's new party. Lapid has three or four people running that claim they're Shomer Shabbos. You take Buzhi Herzog, who in his personal life, I believe, is Shomer Shabbos. In his party, Machaneh Tzioni, whatever they call it, they keep it all over the place. Everyone go, when you have a Rebbe, 50,000 votes on block?
any politician is crawling on the floor to get the Rebbe to hold his shoulder and say, "Das ist mein Mensch. This is my man." What am I talking about in New York today? No, can anyone help me? Mitzitza b'peh. Mitzitza b'peh. Two children were just infected once again with herpes. You don't have to be a big London to know that Mitzitza b'peh is not part of Brit Mila. It comes about, the Gemara says, l'refuah. If there's the slightest chash in the world, you cannot do mitzitza b'peh. You have to do it with a tube. It solves all problems. Is Rakefet saying this? Absolutely not. The Chatan Sofer, Rav Shimshon Fall hears. Rav Chaim Brisker, Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav David Feinstein. How do you expose children? Two children died, three children died, four children died. Absolute evidence. Herpes, infections, what are we doing? Here, they asked the Brisker Rav, why is Suffolk Bikuach Nefesh, that you machal Shabbos, machal Yom Kippur? He said, one in a million. Here, look what you're talking about, statistics. But the Safa don't budge. It's amazing. But that's the power of a Rebbe. It works both ways. The Chassid is the happiest guy in the world. The Rebbe is making his decisions. The Rebbe, as a result, his throne is enhanced. His power increased. 50,000 votes on the block. You just think about that. But let me go further. And here, perhaps, is the most important point of all. We're sitting here in a classroom. Everyone in this room is a Shema Torah mitzvah, and everyone in this room strives to be a Talmud Chacham. Everyone in this room is basically in the same camp. We're very comfortable with each other. Beautiful. But you leave the room. Take my grandson in Bezalel. Finishes Hester. I have two grandsons in Bezalel. And it's interesting. One, it's third year, he wears a very big kippah. Somehow the atmosphere, nothing bothers him. No one bothers him and nothing bothers him. My next grandson, second year Bezalel, wears a kippah like me, and somehow he is totally involved with his fellow students. And he has to answer questions. How did you serve in the army? An instructor there uses the word, a professor there. Tzava Kovesh, Eretz Kfusha. We have no right here. Lesbians, homos, fine, beautiful, good. Shabbat, why not buses? And all these questions are thrown his way. And he comes to me, Francis. I told you yesterday, he gave a fabulous answer, which he was telling me on Shabbos. With this great liberal, we have to have democracy, and homos have to have full rights. He said, yeah, you want the Arabs to take over the land. Absolutely, it's their land. Well, take a look on the YouTube, what they just did in Syria, where they took the homos on a 10-story building and pushed them over. They killed them, and it's all video. That's what you're going to have here. Guy didn't have an, he didn't have an answer. But my grandson told me something interesting. A kid showed up from finishing Hester, tremendous, and he's an artist like my grandson. This is a gift from God. I mean, I can't explain it. This kid, my grandson, told me, they can do cartoons. I look at it, I can't believe what I'm seeing. 10 minutes, this kid does a cartoon that is as good as anything that you've seen in a Walt Disney movie. So this kid is doctoring my grandson's field. And he came, and my grandson took him around. My grandson told me he hopes that a number of more kippot will come. He says, they're religious girls, but you can't tell if they're religious or not because there's nothing to identify them. But he's the only one in his grade, in his field, in his machlaka, wearing a kippah.
Says, I want more. So I explained to him, this is a halakhic concept. You want a miyutra nikar. And he said, why do I want? I said, so why do you want more? He says, I'll feel happier. I'm not the only one that's makpid on davening and looking for a minyan and defends the fact that we have a state and that we're here and that we belong here and that the land belongs to us. Now, what my grandson is telling me in when you reflect upon it is we all want to feel we belong. We're not outcasts. We're not oddballs. The beauty of Hasidus is it creates a community of people who think, live, and act essentially the same way. I belong. I am part of this experience. Ish et re'ehu chazek. And take the dress. Chassidus is ingenious. It's a moving, portable ghetto. What characterized the ghetto? Four walls around where the Jew lived. You couldn't go in, you couldn't go out without permission. You lived in close proximity. You acted the same way, lived the same way, ate the same way. Today we can't live like that. We're out in the big world. But it's a portable ghetto. A beard. Payas. Black clothes. Some student at YU, I saw a different aspect of YU on this trip. He's maledicting YU, the black and whites, he calls them. The uniform, I call it the, he calls it the black and whites. Why can't they be more open-minded? Why can't I bring my girlfriend up to my dorm room? This is Fasgateman 11, what's bothering him? That he can't bring his girlfriend up to his dorm room. God have mercy where these guys are at. That's also part of Yeshiva University. The black and white, but the black and whites, where did you get that idea from? That's Hasidus. It fences you in. It's a fabulous idea. No matter where I am, I represent Hasidus. I'm part of Hasidus. It's much harder for them to sin. Now, I'm not foolish. I'm not stupid. I read the newspapers. Unfortunately, I look at the internet. My students here in the Kollel, David Katz taught me how to use the internet. I see what's going on, but the overwhelming majority are not like that. If for me to sin, what's the big deal? I take off my kippah. I look like Obama. I just had to color my skin, that's all. But outside of that, I look like Obama. I take off the kippah. Oh, when a chassid. What do you mean you take off your kippah? You're wearing a black suit. You got a beard. You got payas. Even if he says, I'm going to sin and take off my beard and payas. But the next day, he's back by his Rebbe. He's meeting his friends. How can he be without a beard and payas? You see, there's a tremendous concept here of belonging. Now, the Hasidim have given it a formal name. Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu, Aleph Nun Shin. When a Hasid uses that word, Enash, he's back in his world. He has someone he can talk to. The world is cold. The world is challenging. The world is totally different. The values are different. And suddenly, Enash. And that Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu, and this is particularly Chabad. Chabadnik can get together, and what's the next word you hear? Min fabrenkt. They make a fabrenken. I saw this in communist Russia. It was unbelievable. What is a fabrenken? We get together, the Litvakim get together, they yell at each other, they shout at each other, they talk and learning, they upslug each other. Hasidim get together, 5-6 Hasidim met in a chveis, in a train station. Each one going differently, but they have 2 hours till their trains come. They sit down together, pop out a bottle of vodka, kichlach, and mifabrenk. They start telling stories of the Rebbeim. They start telling stories of the Alter Heim, the old home. It's a portable, inspirational kit, net, oxygen tank that they can put around themselves in the coldest of climates. No, you with me? Do you know what Fabrengen? That's exactly, you think Fabrengen, only the Rebbe. Yeah, that's the ultimate Fabrengen. When you go to the Rebbe Labriyut and you're surrounded by hundreds, by thousands, by tens of thousands of Hasidim who think alike and dress alike and all eyes upon the Rebbe. But it's not just the big, glorious moments. Hasidim come together. And I've often come in my home over the decades. I've had many Talmidim of the Rebbe. We would come together. As many are not alive. Time moves on. It hurts to see the world disappear before your eyes. And I write about that. I quote the Rebbe talking about it. Except when I heard the Rebbe, I was too young to appreciate the depth of what he was saying. Today, unfortunately, I appreciate it all too well. And suddenly we're talking about the Rebbe. Our wives are walking away bored, stiff. They would rather talk about the latest fashions and the new type of furniture and architecture and art. And we're sitting there talking about the Rav, and each one has a story. And I say, gentlemen, Gavar Chassidim, this is a Fabrengen. This is exactly a Fabrengen. And this is Chassidus. This is Enash. Never forget that word. And this helps the Chassidim. And this helped them survive after World War II. After World War II, everyone believed Torah was finished. Hasidus was certainly finished. But when Jews came together, even though their faith was weakened, even though they had gone through hell, even though they had endless questions, but they remembered the Alter Heim. And this is so important. And this is, there's a beautiful movie that was made by a YU graduate from a Hasidic background, lives as a shtickel of Hasid, Litvak, mixture. Beautiful movie made about Borough Park. Did you see that movie? A People Apart, I think it's called. I hope they turned it into a DVD. It shouldn't be lost. The People Apart. It was made in 1999, if I'm not mistaken. And it was such a powerful movie on Borough Park. And there's one scene there, the man who financed the movie, I believe his name is Jack Gold, if I'm not mistaken. He was a survivor, Chassidish kind, who went through hell, married in the DP camp, and he wanted to throw it all away. How could there be a God after all that happened? All the questions, how much theology we've dealt with, even in this classroom when I dealt with in the Hashkafa class, dealing with questions my students asked me when I dealt with the Holocaust. And he wanted to throw it all away. And his wife said to him, his young wife, also a survivor, if we throw it away, we've given Hitler another victory. It's a powerful vote. Didn't say you have to believe, didn't give Musa, didn't try to give theodicy or theology. No, he went along with her. The kids went to day school, the kids went to BTA, and the kids, his children, all went back to their roots. All became Hasidim. I believe Square Hasidim, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't seen this movie for a while. But it's very kedai. If anyone can check if it's a DVD, I would be willing. I'm the first one to buy it and own it. It's worth it. It's kedai. Check for me. A People Apart, if I'm not mistaken, approximately 1999, Borough Park. And then there's a Hanukkah scene where they're all together, the whole family, his sons, I think there were three or four sons, endless grandchildren. And they're dancing, Hanukkah, Fabrengen, we'll call it. And while they're dancing, you see the sons all in Hasidic clothes with long beards, and the father is clean shaven. And the kids say to the interviewer, "We see our father as he was as a child. You see him dancing now, clean shaven. We see him with a beard and with payas, with bard and payas." Fabulous comment. And that's exactly what Hasidus is all about. That's exactly a nash. That's exactly going back to roots. The father has all the questions, but they're no longer any questions when you see the children and grandchildren continuing. What else is of great interest is you look at the grandchildren. They're dancing. They don't have questions. To them, this is as natural as a kid eating Cholav Yisrael ice cream, a big ice cream cone. Cholav Yisrael today is as good as any ice cream. And you see, this is Hasidus. This is Hasidus. I just want to mention, if I can get through it without crying, there's another part in that movie that has such depth. You see, so when you see the movie, you don't. But if you see it with a literature mind, there is such depth. There's a lady, I think her name was Klein. I've seen her in Borough Park. She works, she owns a woman's clothing store. She should live and be well. I trust she's still active today. And she's second generation. So she says of Vart, she says, "We could never say no to our parents. We know what they went through. We know what they suffered. But our children, thank God, could say no to us when they were growing up." That is a fabulous part. Just think about it. But that's Hasidus. That's Habrenin. That's Enosh. And here I'll tell you a very indecent act that I did. And I smacked myself. Deserve it. In Russia. 1985, when the boss, Aryeh Kroll, Zeichel Tzadik Levracha, I kept on bothering him. You know, I was smug and I was sending so many people. "We want to go back. We want to go back. We want to see our friends in Russia," who were still in refusal. Excuse me. So when Aryeh Kroll finally said, "All right, enough time has elapsed. Let's throw in the visa application and take it further." All right, we get the visas, and 85 was the worst year. They were arresting endless refusnikim, Asirat Zion, and you couldn't use phones, you couldn't use anything. In 81, we were allowed to use phones outside the hotel, public phones. But in 85, we weren't allowed to use anything. So we get to Leningrad, and it's very cold. And Malka and I are now in the hotel. We're in a different hotel. We don't know the area. I'm working with a map. I can't speak. Every word we say is being listened to. And I figure out on the map where Isaac Kogan has moved to. Yitzchak Kogan, the person that I write about this. You'll see, I later name him the Tzaddik of Leningrad, and all the newspapers pick it up when they interview me at the airport the day he came. I called him. Eich Nechanelto. How can we describe him? So Eich Nechanelto. I said, "Tzaddik of Leningrad." Little did I know, I crowned the Tzaddik, Baruch Hashem. So I signal Malka with my hands. We're going to go in and out. We have to wait till it gets dark. We were told when it gets dark, the KGB changes guards. And there's like an hour slot when the old KGB is tired and the new KGB hasn't come in yet. And that winter in particular, we were lucky because it was so cold, many people were sick in Russia, including KGB people. So I signal how we're going to go. We go, and I'm very proud to say I figured out, you know, for me, I'm not a, I never did the army, not a Bedouin who can track something by smell. I figured out what subways, the metro. And of course, we can't call and we can't announce we're coming. We knock on the door, they open the door. Within 1 second, they recognized us. Come in, come in. He had a much longer beard. Now he's a full Chabad chassid. He's wearing, everything is Chabad. Not like in 81, he was just another religious refusenik. And in the house are a few of his friends and two shluchim from the Rebbe from South America, Chabadnikim. And they're in the middle of a Fabrengen. And they're drinking l'chaim, and they're telling stories about the Rebbe, and like all mechitzot were broken. So I'm sitting there like a litvak out in the limb. So the Yetzirah got the worst of me, and they look. You know, these guys are looking at me again, clean shaven. I guess the way the picture appears in Ami, no payas, no black, no white, and the Yetzirah got the worst of me. And I take the glass of vodka, and I lift it, and I say, "Jetzt darf man trinken, the covered the Rebbe. We have to drink now for the Rebbe's covered. But if we want to give him covered, we have to mention who his forebears are, and who the Rebbeim were." And I begin with the Baal Tanya, and I begin with the Mittler Rebbe, and I begin to, and each Rebbe I say a few words, and these guys are fainting. Again. Zevi Aken, he knows it. How does he know all this? And here these guys, and the whole Fabrengen suddenly shifted gears. Instead of the Hasidim telling stories, the Litvak is capturing the audience. But I was naughty, but I had to show off. What could I do? My inferiority complex got the best of me. But this is Enash. This is a Fabrengen. This is Hasidut. And this is why they were able to have such success after the Holocaust. You take the Litvakin, if 10% remain from, I'm overstating the case. The Hasidim, 30, 40% remain, but it's not just that. The rebirth was unbelievably dramatic. Today there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Hasidim in the world. How many Litvakim, real Litvakim? Yeah. Let me go. I'll open to questions in 1 minute.
Yeah. The movie that you mentioned.
Yeah. What about the movie?
Called A Life Apart.
A Life Apart. And is it available DVD?
It's on PBS. It seems like it's.
Is it on? Is it on? Can you download it?
I'll check.
Check. What do they call it? The YouTube it would be on.
Maybe.
And who? What year was it done? 92, oh, it's much earlier than 99. Interesting. And did they tell you who did it?
I'll get back to you on that also.
Okay, just say it. Very good, very good. 92, you say, wow. Okay, now let me go one step further. What Hasidus developed, it developed an entire literature, an entire theology, an entire philosophy that goes way beyond the Litvish world and the normative sparim that everyone accepts. If you're a Lubavitcher, you're a Gera, you're a Belzer, a Grushin, wherever you turn, Colin Stalin, a square which descends from Chernobyl and Grushin, wherever you turn, there's endless literature, and it's literature with new concepts. Zohar dances in front of your eyes. It intermingles with Medrash, it intermingles with Agada. These Svarim have a tremendous pull. It's not like a sugya in Psachim with Kodshim, not like a sugya in Bab Metzia where you're going to deal with Chayshin Mishpat. It's not like a sugya in Kedushin where you're going to deal with Eben HaEzra or a sugya in Yevamot. It's life, warmth, heart. For inquisitive minds, it's very attractive. You take Reb Nachman B'Breslov, his stories, how many interpretations have been given to those stories. See, it's a learning that even a balabas who comes home after a hard day's work, he's been working in Osim, take Israel. In America, he's been working in the Diamond District. Chassid comes home. 8 o'clock at night for him to open a Gemara, very difficult. I can't ishtalten kop. We say it in Yiddish. How do you say it in English? He can't concentrate. He can't. But the Hasidic Svarim pull you in. Romance, life, feeling, depth, soul, Zohar, Akada. It's a whole different world. And I give you a basic example which opens up the whole world of Hasidus, particularly Chabad. We'll see in a minute the difference between Chabad and everyone else. You take the concept of Klipat. Whoever heard of the concept you learn, Shas and Paiskim, I don't believe the concept of Klipat can be found anywhere in Shas and Paiskim. But you go into the Tanya already, you go into the Hasidic Svarim, Klipat is the story of our existence today. And what does it mean? Very simply, we live it day in and day out. We live it right here in the Kollel. We live it in all of Israel. We live it wherever you go in the United States, Canada, France, England, Australia, South Africa. Every Jew has a soul. Every Jew seeks holiness. And our problem is that we're out in the big world. We've gone through the Holocaust. We have no education. The chain has been broken. Describe it as you wish. The Hasidic literature calls it klipot, klipot, klipot. Layers of skin, I would say. Layers upon layers upon layers have grown on top of your heart, on top of your soul, on top of das pintel yid. That basic kindly yid that is within you. And the challenge to Hasidus, the challenge to a Rebbe, the challenge what the Chabadnikim call a mashbia, is to eradicate those klipot, destroy the klipot, remove the klipot, neutralize the klipot. If you get rid of the klipot, you get to the soul. And this is our generation. Look at the Balei Tshuva in our generation. I believe that the majority of Shomrei Shabbos Jews in the world today are Balei Tshuva. The majority. Take South Africa. South Africa, the highest percentage of Shmirat Shabbat among the Jews. That percentage may even be higher than the state of Israel. It's over 40%, I'm told. Shmirat Shabbat, b'parchesia. No, 90% or more are Balei Tshuva. Take NCSY. Look what NCSY has accomplished. Take Chabad. I've seen in Chabad people davening for Mohammed, and you could hear from their ivra that their Johnny come latelys. You hear it from their ivra. And overwhelming. And the years I've been teaching, my greatest students have been products of NCSY. With all that implies. I had Talmidim in the Kollel. One Talmid told me, my parents became frum from seeing Fiddler on the Roof. I said, I hold this Kedushin for that. I love that song, Sunrise, Sunset. That's the greatest mussar a person can have, is to understand that song. Don't let your life waste away. Swiftly flow the days. Oh, is this the little boy I carried? Is this the little girl at play? No, those of you that are parents, do you think your kids are going to be young forever? They're grandparents sitting here, great-grandparents sitting here. Think your kids are going to reach an age where they're smarter than you? At least they think they're smarter. And you better kowtow to them. That's the reality. It's very hard for fathers and mothers to accept this. It's very hard. Harder, I think, for a father than a mother on that level. To part from a child, it's harder for a mother than a father. I have a lot of Torah on this. A lot of it I heard from the Rebbe, but it's not for now. But this is Chassidus. What song made them from? Tradition. Could you imagine people went to a play, to a Broadway show, saw a movie, and heard that song, Tradition, and they started to ask themselves questions. And they became Balei Tshuva. Their sons, their children learned in the finest yeshivas, the finest seminaries. That particular Talmud was one of my top Talmudim that year. Certain years I did surveys, I found out that 50% of the people in Gris were either first generation Balei Tshuva or second generation. Here, you have a young man here, Yomos from the Ukraine. No? You think he could observe Tayak Mitzvot in the Ukraine? God have mercy, thank God he's here. By the way, a Jew was already killed in the fighting. What I spoke about yesterday, in today's news, they say a Jewish woman was killed. They shot missiles indiscriminately, many were killed. Ah, God so lucky, what's going on in the world? But this is Chassidus, this is Klipat, this is it. And this is why a Chabadnik is so different than a guy like me. Could you picture Rabbi Yochanan Gerelick standing on the street corner? Did you put on tefillin today? What? Rabbi Kefet's attitude? You didn't put on your shake, it's a nice stuff. Get the heck out of here. Who gives a hoot about you? That's a litvak. A chassid. He wants to lift away the klipot, a chabadnik. You understand? Did you put on tefillin today? Come, you're a Jew. Put on. Won't harm you. Say the Shema. And who knows what comes out of putting on form. I mean, it's beyond words. The difference, the beauty of Chassidus. I envy it. I'm a Litvak. What can I do? I'm a Litvak. It's in my blood. But the Chassidim, the candles standing in Ben Yehuda, standing in Tel Aviv, on Dizengoff, Kolein v'bat matlikan neirot Shabbat. You understand? Here, take the neirot, give it out. Never take money. Yeah, all right, so you'll say, no big deal, she lit Shabbos candles. What's the big deal? What happened afterwards? But you never know. Personalized Shabbos candles, the child sees, they ask questions. Once you ask questions, there's no end to where they lead to. The Rebbe said, a Meir Dikvot, I'll never forget this part. Why is the Haggadah built within the framework of questions? The four questions. Right at the start of the Haggadah, you can have the whole Haggadah without the questions. You don't need the questions. And the Rav said, Merit Dikvad. It's because we have to teach our people, our children, that the basis of Yiddishkeit begins with questions. We want you to ask. We want you to seek answers. We want you to seek guidance. When a Jew starts to ask, then there's hope that it will end with total commitment. But if you don't ask, you'll never begin. The search will never begin. And this is the beauty. Take those klipot, rip them away, get rid of them. And here, I'll end off the class, this part of the class, not another part. I'm going to give you something, Morgana. I want you to, your wife to give me her impression. You'll see. But let's finish off the lecture. Only someone like myself who saw what Torah was like before the end of World War II can appreciate what we have today. Yitzchak can appreciate it too. He's my age. The rest of you are youngsters. You can't fully comprehend what I'm talking about. But all right. Rafi, you'll try. From the claim, you'll become the grace. Baruch HaTolam HaNachol HaNashem. Chabad is trying to do a lot to perpetuate the Rebbe's memory and the Rebbe's accomplishments. When I say the Rebbe, I mean the seventh Rebbe. So on one of their websites, they interview people about their encounters with the Rebbe. And here's an interview that appeared January 3rd, 2015, with a Mrs. Leah Rivka Arkush. Who is Mrs. Leah Rivka Arkush? She's the Chabad Shlucha in Birmingham, England since 1974. And just listen to her story. My name is Leah Rivka Arkush. I come from England, where I grew up in Stamford Hill in a non-religious home just two streets away from Beis Lubavitch, Lubavitch House. When we first moved to Stamford Hill, I pointed out the Beis Lubavitch to my mother and I said to her, "Look, this is a place where I could go to school." My mother agreed to check it out. But she didn't. I had to nudge her a few times until finally she found out. And yes, it was a place that was good for me. So I started going to school there. It is a typical story. A girl comes to a new area, sees a nice building, a school two blocks from her house, a day school. During those years, my father was badly injured in a car crash. The recuperation took a long time. And while he was in the hospital, my mother struggled very much because we didn't have any money. One day then, the headmaster of the Chabad school, Rabbi A.D. Sufrin, Avram David perhaps, Sufrin, got a phone call from the Rebbe's office inquiring about us. How did the Rebbe know we were in trouble? I had no idea. But when Rabbi Sufrin related that we were not doing so well, he was told, quote, "You must make sure that they have food and whatever they need," end quote. Father comes home from the hospital, he's still weak. Chabad hires him to work in one of their projects, pay him a salary, and once again, the Rebbe sends a message to this Rabbi Sufrin, quote, "She's got to stay. You got to sort out what has to be, but I want her in that school. I do not want her to leave." And this girl is having a lot of problems. Her home is not kosher. Where can she eat? The school is influencing her. The parents are caught in the middle. From then on, the school looked after me. Since my parents' home is not kosher, the school arranged for me to eat at the Shagalas and the Sufrins. My mother was not happy about it. I was only 12 years old, but she went along with it. This went on until I graduated elementary school and went to seminary. I was there for 3 years. Only later did I find out that the Rebbe actually paid my tuition. The checks he sent didn't come from any Chabad organization. They were his own personal checks, just his name, and that's all. They didn't want to cash them, but they were told that they had to. Ellie, did you understand that? Joe DiMaggio wrote checks. He never paid for anything in his life. You got a check for Joe DiMaggio, $59.90. You were an idiot if you cashed it. Today, you take DiMaggio's picture with the check, frame it, and give it to Sotheby's. It's worth a few $100s. Got it? So you get a check signed Menachem M. Schneerson. Who wants to cash it? It's the Rebbe's handwriting. They were told they have to cash it. When I completed seminary, I was given a teaching position with Lubavitch. And around that time, I was also given the opportunity to come to New York and meet the Rebbe. I traveled with Mr. Shakalov. But when the time came for the audience, I wanted to see the Rebbe alone. He was seated behind the desk, piled with stacks of letters. And I was amazed that he immediately plucked my letter out from that huge pile. My letter was in the middle of a stack, and yet he knew which was mine. The Rebbe said to me, "I've read your letter, but you didn't write all the things that you do." And then he started to list the very activities I took part in. My teaching, the groups, camps, clubs that I was involved with. I had not written to him about it. Then he said, that's a lot of quantity. But not only do you have quantity, you also have quality, because all the teachings that you're giving the children is quality. That's good. Now, I mean, you see the relationship there? She's sitting before the Rebbe. Who cares about her? Who knows her better than anyone else? Who is telling her, you're not just giving quantity, you're giving quality? But then she tells a story. Only a chassid can tell a story like this. After that, I went in and asked Mrs. I went out and Mrs. Shakalov went in. She told me later that he also asked her about my parents, if they were good to me, and let me go on the path of Judaism. And Mrs. Shakalov assured him that all was fine. Now listen to this. Strange thing happened when Mrs. Shakalov was with the Rebbe. She had written out all her issues and requests and had handed this note to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe responded to her questions one by one. Only when she came out of his office did she realize that she still had the note that she had written to the Rebbe. What she had handed in was not that note. She handed in her shopping list for her visit to New York. And she was just mortified by what she had done. But she was also amazed that the Rebbe knew all her issues and requests and responded as if she had handed him the correct piece of paper. Do you understand what's happening here? This is a chassida with the Rebbe. Listen to this now. When I returned to England, people began to press me to start dating for marriage, but I felt I was not ready yet. Still, a marriage was proposed, and I and the boy each wrote to the Rebbe to ask if he approved. The Rebbe's secretary, Rabbi Leibel Groner, you'll see this is a friend of mine, called with the reply. The boy got an answer, yes, but I got an answer, no. The boy got an answer, yes. So she called 770, got Rabbi Groner, got Leibel, should live and be well, on the phone. Hold on a moment. Then another man's voice came on the line. And he said, to the boy, I said yes, to indicate you're a wonderful girl and he should look for someone similar to you. But to you, I said no, because he is not for you. And then I said, who am I talking to? He replied, Rabbi Schneerson. I said, do you mean the Rebbe? After a few second pause, which felt like forever, he said, yes, it took me a while to absorb that. Then the Rebbe said, don't worry about dating yet. Just think about it for now, and God willing, you will meet the right person at the right time, and you will get married, but for now, don't worry about it. I said, thank you, and that was it. At that time, I didn't make a big deal of what had happened, but I realize now that I was very privileged to have had the Rebbe's personal attention. I was a poor girl from a non-religious family, and he made sure that my life followed the right path. He personally made sure, and I shall forever be grateful for his kindness and his care. I think that that little interview brings everything to life, makes everything tangible, what I spoke about earlier. So, today's shiur, and I apologize that it's from Litvak, it's emotional because I've seen Chabad up close and what they have done. And it's overwhelming. With all the problems, I'm well aware of it, that in the rabbinate, you know, Chabad comes in, and the local rabbi, but there's Chabad, and you can't generalize, and Chabad is like YU. It's many different spectrums, it's a wide spectrum, but what a movement today. It's beyond words that the Israeli government, lord of the land today, that if someone goes out on Shlichut for Chabad, he is credited or she is credited with having served in the army or having done Shevet Lumi. That's the law of the land today. So you see how much Chabad has accomplished. So I just want to reiterate this part of the lecture. I have a lot more next week. You'll see, be very fascinating. The next few weeks in general are very fascinating because it's a world that no one has touched. What do we do today? Just a few words by a Litvak, an outsider, looking in to Hasidus. The Jewish Action article came right on time. I couldn't believe when it came out. And Neo-Hasidus is a beautiful concept to call it, Neo, like they call Rav Shimon Shaful Heish Neo-Orthodoxy. It's right on. Exactly. It's the Torah of eternity, but it's seeing it in a new light. And there's a lot to be said about Hasidus. Never forget the concept of Enash. It is so important for us. Life is challenging. We don't know where we're going to be in life. You know my vort, it's my vort. And then 30, 40, 50 years later, if I said it the first time, I hear a tape of the Rav. There's my vort, the Rav is saying it. So, Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim. But you know how we bless a kid. Yisimcha b'ni Ephraim u'Menashe. It's a good question. Sarah Rivka Rachaleya, I understand. Ephraim u'Menashe. Why not Avraham Avinu, Yitzhak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu? Why only Ephraim u'Menashe? And I said in a drasha I gave in front of Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein when I was younger than you, studying for Smicha, because we don't know where we're going to be in life. Ephraim u'Menashe, the first Jewish children who wound up in a total alien environment in Egypt. And they remained good Jews. So we're saying to the kid Friday night, we don't know where you're going to be and what's going to happen to you in life. But wherever you will be, Yisim Chalokim, Kefraim Ruchim Adash. And that's Enash. And that's why, following the Holocaust, their percentage of survival, revival, is higher than any other part of the Torah world. And we're just beginning. Who knows, 100 years from now, the President of Israel will be a Chassid, the Prime Minister will be a Chassid, the Ramatkal will be a Chassid. That I have no doubt. The Ramatkal will be a Chassid. We're just beginning. Why you? And Rakefet was ahead of the troops when they appointed Rabbi Weinberger. Remember the nasty emails I got? What does Rabbi Rakefet say about a Hasidish Mashkiach? And my answer was very simple. If one more kid will be Shomer Shabbos, this will make me extremely happy. Ad kan the lecture per se. Now I just want to go further. Rabbi Riskin has flown, I say he's coming under the radar with all the questions today about feminism and women and what role, and I got hit with this obviously in America as well, and we have this question here time and again. So Rabbi Riskin is just given, according to the news releases, heta hora to a number of women. The title he has given them is Rebbetzin, Rabbanit Rabbaniyot. And he's appointed a woman to be a Rabbanit in Efrat, to answer all the women's questions, etc. Now, more than that, Lindenbaum, the institution in Reshet Lindenbaum, under his aegis, is sponsoring programs now, not just for Rabbaniyot, but that a five-year program, the women will become Dayanot. And I don't have to tell you, we're dealing here with tremendous halakhic problems, what a spiritual leader who is feminine can do and can't do. We are dealing here with the heart of the conflict of Torah in the Western world. As I mentioned yesterday, Rakefet is laughing all over the place because he was so naive and foolish. Time and again, I said in the Kollel, I envy the Haredi world where they are not being challenged by these problems of feminism, And all of you know that this problem has just surfaced in the Haredi world. Wow! A new party has been formed. Haredi'ot are yelling and shouting and demanding representation, raising, I saw an interview with one of the women, raising all the problems that the women go to work, the women raise the children, the men do nothing. The statistics show that Haredi men live many more years than Haredi women. And wow, has this problem hit both in the Ashkenazic world, the Aguda world, the Gera world, the Shas world, Adina Bar Shalom, etc. Now, not only that, I have here a printout, and this is very moving for me because it's dedicated to the memory of Esther Karish. Esther Karish is Zichrona Tzadeket Lebracha. One of the earliest students in BMT on Rehov HaBavanel was Michael Karish, Zeichet Tzadik Lebracha. And he stayed in Israel. He got very heavily involved. Yehuda V'Shomron, they were among the leaders of the settlements. And both died young. He died first, then Esther died. And this is Divrei Torah from women, people in Rabbi, women in Rabbi Riskin's program. It is called Mashe Latach Esther V'Ta'as Lezecha Esther Karish Zal, put out by R. Torah Stone, including a whole article here on women being Dayanat. Mori, I want you to show this to your wife. She studies in Nishmat, am I right?
Matan.
I want her input. Your wife is a Talmid. Chachamah, the bat of a Litvishe Talmud Chacham, the bat of a Talmud of Rabbarim Katla. At your wedding, all the cutlers were there. I want your input. This is the article. Pass this down to Mori, too. And you can show it to whoever you want. It's not Charlie. Regards from your father-in-law. He met him in Deerfield Beach, right? This is for Yitz. Very fascinating, but very insightful. With big kedushin, maybe right, maybe wrong. All right. This is very interesting. And if anyone's art scroll, I can't believe what's going on. Everything but everything is coming out in English. It's going to reach a time that no Anglo will be able to open a sefer in the original language. And this is very, very sad, but I guess it's better to have it in English if you can't understand the Hebrew. And I can't criticize art scroll, because whenever I criticize art scroll at a public lecture, five people will get up and tell me after this, we only became frum because of the art scroll translation. I don't know, I find the art scroll translation so verbose that I go back to Sansina when I have a passage I want to check. But they just put out the Rashbam in English. And believe it or not, they edited parts of the Rashbam. And my student, Mark Shapiro, went to work, Kadako Bakodesh, and he shows you exactly what they took out. Evidently, his blog caused so much commotion that Artscroll felt the need to respond. So they gave a response that I think is a little double talk. It has to be checked out with an early edition, this edition, that edition. What edition did they depend upon? If anyone is into Mikra and Rashbam and can give me an erudite opinion after going through all this, I would be happy to pass this on to you. I'm looking for help. Anyone here? No one in Mikra? You can handle it. Your father, that's right. Pass it on. Let me know what my Talmud, your father, has to say.
I don't know if he has time to read, but I can ask him.
Okay, ask him. It's got not in your field, is it? You're in philosophy, but this also. Do me a favor, if your father doesn't have time, pass it on to Yitzchak, to Rabbi Reuben.
Okay? I can read it and ask him questions.
Yeah, don't decide them, then I leave it in your good hands. Now, if anyone's interested, this is fascinating too. It's on the Rebbe giving advice on fertility treatment. And you'll see the Rebbe had hesitancy where he felt there was conflict with halacha. What's interesting is how they reproduce his letters. That's just amazing, with his signature. So you're not going to say it's a forgery, which in our world, unfortunately, can happen all the time. My dear students, next Sunday we continue with some innovative ideas with why we need an Erev, and I've titled the next shiur, The Red Bindle from Kever Rachel. Rabbi Mendel's mind, just seminal. He came up with what I discussed yesterday, what I see coming. I admire a person with a mind like that. That's all I can say. Seminal, like the Minchat Chinuch. That is next Sunday, and next Monday we continue our introductory lecture to Chassidus, and then we sail into the Malachim. And wow, that is a fascinating topic, and it means so much to a guy named Aaron Rakefet, because the Malachim began on 169th Street on Washington Avenue. My father spent his formative years 174th on Washington Avenue, and a little kid named Donnie Rothkopf grew up and spent his first 22 years at 180th and Washington Avenue. In addition, in my wife's family, there are Malachim, and I'll tell you one story from her family that you will never forget. If there are no questions, I say to this erudite audience, and I also forgot to extend greetings to all the people listening to me around the world, and I have to tell you, it's real. I always think it's a joke when people come up to me in Florida, or someone flew in just to meet me for Shabbos from Olympia, Washington. I corresponded with him, and he flew back on Sunday. I think he's crazy to meet one of my Rebbe. What's he meeting? But we spent a wonderful Shabbat together, and people quote from my Shiurim. And one quote that's gone all over the world is because of Rabbi Rubin, and I have to thank him. You have no idea how many people were moved when you ripped the hell out of me in class for quoting from the Minchat Laza. Do you remember a few months ago? And I told you, Rabbi Rubin, I have the same complaints you have to the Munchat Shurav. But I said, there's one thing about him that Hukana'oti, he won me over. And I told the story. The member told us the wedding of his daughter in 1935. Big mob scene. The Munchat Shurav's daughter is getting married. Ksidim Menash. By the tens of thousands came out. And they went over to him and said, Rebbe, mevil machana movies for my wife. Want to make a movie? He said, oh, no, that's it. He said, no, mevet das Weissen in America. They're going to show it in America. Ah, in America? He gave them permission. And this is on the websites today. That beautiful, what the computer does. God bless the computer. Only good, no bad. On the movie, you see the Rebbe in the carriage, remember? And there, endless Hasidim around him. I believe it was a car, not a horse. It was a car actually. And it was horse-drawn. Well, Yomo, you're shaking your head. Am I right or wrong? Which was it?
I don't think you could see it in the frame, but it's definitely not a car. Probably.
It was a carriage with, could be, and then it was drawn by horses. So he's in the carriage, and he says, no, if they interviewed most of the Gedolei Yisrael, they would have said, Yidna in America, Jews in America, Mizayin Odomdo, we're poor, Shtitzram Sunta, help us out, send money, help our institutions. What did the Munkacha say? Yidna in America, hit Shabbos, observe Shabbos, and he started to cry. You can see it in the movie. And he says, on a Shabbos, without Shabbos, we won't remain Jews. I salute the Munkacha at that moment. Yitzchak is right, I'm also right. People quoted that to me in Hollywood, Florida. The fellow who came in from Seattle told me, he's a Chabadnik, an Olympian, doesn't even have a minyan many Shabbatot, said that was overwhelming to him. So Baruch Hashem, that was the Munkacha. To all my students and here and there and everywhere, until we meet again in health and happiness, only besorah tova yeshuv v'nechamata leinu al kol Yisrael. We owe more money to the Israeli government. The entertainment we are getting is this election, Obama versus Netanyahu. Gentlemen, another 5% added to your taxes.
Until we meet again, health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Okay. So I told you, it had nothing to do with the lectures. That was historic. This is now from within. It's a different ballpark. But today's lecture was very moving, very hard for me. Yeah, that's the movie.
97, not 97.
Okay. The movie was 97. So I listened so far off 99. And Jessica Parker is in the movie. You know why? Her sister is a Hasida living in Borough Park. And one second. And its format is DVD.
Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon.
And you can buy it on Amazon. Okay.
What's the cost?
$19.
Yeah. So you can't watch it.
Okay, one second.
It's not on Prime. You can watch it on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Okay. It's only like 4 or 5 parts on YouTube.
I didn't see it. Okay.
Yeah, how do you get it? You just type in a Life Apart?
Life Apart, and then there's also that one about the community in London, Stamford Hill. Something about Volvo. Apparently all the Hasidim in the 80s drove Volvos.
Wait a minute, do you think it could be streamed?
Not rainforest.
Can you stream it?
Great. Yeah, on YouTube. You can watch it on YouTube.
Okay, A Life Apart. Hasidicism in America.
That's Rabbi Schiller. He taught me in high school.
That's right. He's in the movie, too.
He's in the movie in the MTA gym with a bunch of guys playing hockey.
That's right. That's correct. That's correct. That's correct.
He showed it to all the kids in MTA.
Yeah.
On VHS.
So what would it be? A published program? What was Pete? What did you say? PBS? Well, what did you say on
YouTube?
No, what was your last word? He showed
VHS.
VHS.
Oh, VHS.
VHS.
What year was it? 97.
That means that it wasn't even so far away when I had it, but he was showing it.
Okay, start page 188. Okay, here's the picture of Avigdor Milch.